My name is John Erling. Today's date is December 2nd, 2014. Might say it's a 30-degree day, cold and cloudy, kind of a gray day here at Grand Lake. But we like being here anyway, and joining me here at the lake is Dr. Bruce Howell, and we're going to tell the story of the history of Grand Lake and how it came about. Dr. Howell, you've been a teacher, a coach, superintendent of Tulsa Public Schools, professor and chair of the School of Educational Administration and Research at the University of Tulsa. 42 years in education. Would that be accurate?
That's correct.
Now you have become an historian of sorts for Northeast Oklahoma, having written and put out a book not too long ago, which was called
Echoes from the Past, 2 volumes.
And that was a series of articles that you had done about this area.
Yes, and were published in the area newspapers.
You have become an historian because I don't think anybody else has researched this as much as you have. And at this date, you are writing the history of this area, 1806, A History of Northeast Oklahoma. That book, then, will be coming out, and that will be different from your previous book?
Yeah, it's a chronological history dating from the time that the first explorer actually discovered Three Forks down at Muskogee, the confluence of the Grand Arkansas and Verdigris Rivers.
And that first explorer was?
James Wilkinson. James Wilkinson started actually in Kansas and followed the Arkansas River on what he thought would be a 2-week trip to New Orleans on the Arkansas River. And the Arkansas River is so fickle. He started in late October. It froze, it drained out, it filled up, and it took him 54 days just to get to Three Forks. So that's the beginning of a long story.
Well, we have a river here that became a lake as well, the Neosho River, also known as Grand River. We'll get into the names later on, and then, of course, we have Grand Lake over the Cherokees, but those names came about after much discussion. We should say that Grand Lake over the Cherokees is part of the Mississippi River system, which drains into the Gulf of Mexico, and then the lake follows the bed of the Neosho River.
Neosho.
But we start with the vision of a man by the name of Henry Holderman. I believe he was 16 when he had a vision. What can you tell us about him?
The family lived in Chautauqua, Kansas. Henry Holderman's dad would transport lumber down to Spavinaw, down to the mill at Spavinaw, Lynch's Mill. Then they would return with ground grain of different kinds to Chautauqua. On his way, of course, he had to cross the Grand River, basically near Pensacola. At the age of 16, he began getting this vision, this idea of building a dam somewhere on this river. And of course, as a 16-year-old kid, he had no wherewithal, didn't understand what he was doing. He had some kind of an altercation, I think at Muskogee, that caused him to flee the territory. He ended up in Africa. I guess he went to India after that. But during his time in India, he learned how to build mud dams. And so he had somewhat of a background. When he returned at the age of 18, after 3 or 4 years, he and his older brother floated down on a raft the full length of the Neosho River, all the way to Three Forks, the confluence of the Arkansas and the Verdigris and Grand. He was looking for a place to locate a dam. His brother had had some education as an engineer a year or so, and so he had a little background. And believe it or not, they almost picked the site where the Pensacola Dam was eventually located. Actually, the site they picked was about 300 yards further south on what was determined later became the Seneca Fault. Seneca Fault runs from Seneca, Missouri to Pryor, and when they considered building the dam there, some of the workmen were losing their tools in this crevice. So as a result of that, they moved the dam further north to its present location.
I think by about 300 yards.
300 yards.
Which is the reason, I understand, that Langley, the main street, doesn't directly butt up and make sense. You might tell them.
Highway 28 was designated to go through Langley, and then directly across the dam. But Langley Main Street was built, and then they made this discovery So now, of course, 28 turns off and passes in front of the GRDA building and crosses further north.
You know, Henry was real remarkable because, as you've stated, 14 and then 18, and he spent actually most of his adult life and money in pursuing this dream.
Yes, his problem was that he didn't have enough credibility with the banking industry or the money industry. And as a result of that, every time he would set up a corporation, for one reason or another, it would fail. It was Cyrus Avery, actually, that began the first effort to build a dam.
He wasn't a trained engineer, I guess. That was his problem.
That was one of his problems. That's true. Another byline, the guy was also adventuresome. He also took part, for example, when they were looking for a couple of brothers who had shot and killed a deputy marshal. And he joined Ike Gilstrap, who was deputy marshal for Judge Parker. They were hunting these fellows down, and Gilstrap got killed during that period, and Holderman was one of the posse. He has a varied background. He always seemed to be in the center of things.
I think he lost the land allotments given him and his wife and children by the Cherokees. He lost those, borrowed money from his friends. They didn't want anything to do with them.
That's correct.
And then when he went out east, those wealthy capitalists, they didn't want to do it once they learned the dam would be in Indian territory where only Indians could own land.
Well, then he tried a scheme with some Chicago financiers and found that what they wanted to do was kite the bond payments. He, in turn, rejected that. So it was a two-way street. Sometimes they rejected him. On at least one occasion, he rejected an opportunity to possibly build a dam, although it was a long shot.
Henry Holderman did see his dream come true after all, didn't he?
Oh, yes. He fished the lake for 10 years after it was formed. It was formed in March of 1940. It was filled the following November. He didn't die for another 10 or 11 years.
I think he was 77 when he died, but he died a pauper, and here's a man with his dream. It may have happened without him sometime, but may not have happened when it did.
Well, it was certainly through his constant effort and encouragement, at least to push it along.
Yeah, so we really have to give him full credit for it.
Absolutely. I think he and Bill Holloway are the prime characters in this saga.